Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnayer.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
So, Robert, last week we left off with the infamously short tenure of Michael Ovitz leading Disney. And Ovitz, by the way, had been an incredible kind of negotiator agent before that. If you want to know how David Letterman got onto CBS... And just look it up. Ovitz engineered that brilliantly. That's how brilliant he was as an agent, right? NBC, you know, when Carson didn't designate, you know, it didn't go to Letterman, right? And it went to Leno. The maneuvering by Ovitz was brilliant. So I think Eisner and Disney were genuinely very impressed by that, right?
I mean, well, because he effectively, NBC had it to where Letterman couldn't pitch himself to company. So they reversed the process where basically, you know, it's totally legal if David Letterman is benignly listening to heads of companies pitching themselves to him.
Right. Yep.
They can't stop somebody from pitching themselves to David Letterman. I mean, so he was a brilliant guy, but probably the worst person in the world to have to fire.
Yes. Right, because he knew all these legalities and technicalities. Right, so on the late night thing, don't want to get too deep into it, but that is exactly right, because Letterman was trapped and he couldn't. He was going to be stuck at this after the Tonight Show thing that he had done for 10 years. He wasn't getting the Tonight Show, and Ovitz devised this strategy. Yeah, you're stuck. You're an NBC employee, but what if I set up CBS coming to you and this sponsor coming to you and you're just passively listening and I'm the one who's making the call to them, right? So Michael Ovitz was the one who made the calls. It was brilliant. And actually changed business and kind of talent representation in so many ways, because that's now even become the way you deal with someone who might be under contract if it's a manager at another company. But all of this was pioneered by him. But he came into Walt Disney and spent 18 months at the company and parachuted out with, I think, $40 million in a severance package and like $150 million in stock. And the shareholders eventually sue Michael Eisner for this, which you know, further complicates matters. And now let's talk about, after that money was paid to Ovitz, what happened to the parks. So let's start with Eisner's concept that he needs to change things. They're scaling back, they're getting cheap, and his kids, as you said, say that it's Disney is for babies. So let's start with the Tiki Room.
So the Tiki Room needed an update. It really truly did. It was you know, it was a great icon of the park. It was wonderful. It's a pleasant place, you know, for parents to just sort of sit down and calm down, and the kids can chill out and they can, you know, see something really beautiful and cute and lively for a few minutes, and then the parents can kind of get up and be like, all right, another 4 hours of this. Well, it was sort of a hidden secret that, you know, kind of like a leaking roof that you can't really afford to, or you don't want to pay for. You know, Disney was kind of putting buckets and being like, yeah, I know, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. Well, eventually, they need to replace somebody who is going to be the chief operating officer of the parks. And because when Ovitz left, everybody kind of moved up in the company, kind of. And so they select this guy who was known for cutting the fat. And so the first thing that he decides to do is, well, you know, we don't need to completely rebuild the Tiki Room. All we need to do is look for really popular Disney characters that is already in the kids and, you know, the national zeitgeist, and they can be, you know, easily put together animatronics, and they can become the main centerpieces of the new Tiki Room. So, in his infinite wisdom, he takes the Rowan Atkinson character from The Lion King, which I am the only Disney fan in the world who can say Rowan Atkinson, but can't say the name of the character that Rowan Atkinson played in The Lion King. And they take the parrot Yagu from Aladdin, and instead of actually doing what the Disney park lover wanted, which was a complete refurbish of the ride, they just stick these two guys there. And the end result is that still to this day, it is known as a complete monstrosity what they did. Like, you know, you go to, there's a number of different nostalgic theme park YouTubers, you know, there's Yesterworld or, you know, Defunct Land that are really, really popular, and they always make jokes about the Tiki Room. So it was not a popular remedy. And I think you want to talk a little bit more in particular about the Tiki Room, so I'll leave that for you. But I will just say that at the same time, there was also a very public push to change certain aspects of Pirates of the Caribbean, in particular the scenes in Tortuga where you have women running away from the pirates. It's a very popular gag where there's two women who are running away from the pirates. The pirates are inebriated and they're chasing after the women. And then you have the third one, which is a woman who is chasing after a pirate, and the pirate's in the same pose as the woman running away going, you know, ah! And it was always a very popular gag. But it became seen as very offensive, and it is. And so it was changed in a makeshift way. So now the joke, it doesn't really exist or make sense, but instead of them just doing away with the joke, it would have been too expensive to remove the pull mechanics that were in place. So instead of you know, just removing and refurbishing that one section, they weren't thinking about the ride going experience, they were thinking about the cost. And so what they did was they just flipped the dummies around. So now if you go there, it's just three women chasing who still have faces of absolute terror, like they're running and screaming from this one pirate, chasing a man who looks like he's trying to chase after this woman, running in terror from her, and the whole thing just looks stupid. But it's an example again of Disney starting to give in to public pressure, but at the same time not being willing to spend the money to correct it. So what they start doing is they start looking for the cheapest way possible. And this is also the same time where Disney makes, honestly, two errors that there's still a lot of resentment about. And that is they close 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea for refurbishment.
So, just to finish this thought, I think you covered it all on the Tiki Room. Now, what I want to move to is what you were about to say. So you have two beloved rides that were kind of the, you know, and again, I'm in college at this time. By the time this is all these changes are happening, I'm out of college. I'm in a professional life. But even among young people in our 20s, so the rides we wanted to go to Disney to experience were the roller coasters, right? Space Mountain, Thunder Mountain, Splash Mountain. Now, the other following attractions, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Yes.
Peter Pan, which they, you know, they kind of, yeah, we'll get to it. And then the Tiki Room, which, you know, we were shocked by the changes. And things like Carousel of Progress and Country Bear Jamboree. And I'll start with this, and I'm going to let you pick up with your 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea point. With Carousel of Progress, we thought, okay, they had done the 60s, so they're just going to leave it at that, or we're going to get the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Instead, they just jumped to the present day. They added new. and at that point, we're thinking, okay, so either you honor Walt's legacy by just ending the ride where it ended in the World's Fair in 64, in the 60s, which is basically the end of Walt's life too, or you then make it complete by updating it through the years that the Disney park has existed in Florida. Instead, I mean, they jumped like two or three generations. It was crazy. So as you were about to say, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which, by the way, was also, at least for my generation, one of the iconic Disney movies. So yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about Disney hitching their wagon to all their IP. But in this case, they decided to kill the IP of one of their iconic franchises.
So Disney decides that originally they were going to refurbish it because 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is a very, very complicated ride. It is an actual submarine that takes place in a man-made lagoon. Even though technically the images that you're seeing in the actual viewfinders or, you know, the actual, you know, portholes are not the actual lagoon itself. It was simulated bubbles and things like that. It was still very expensive. Add into the fact that it took up an incredible amount of real estate in a very crowded part of the park. But it was beloved. So it was just one of those things where, you know, all right, yeah, you gotta keep it. You know, it's like Carousel Progress. You gotta keep it. Well, at the time, it would have been too expensive. And if there had not been a Euro Disney, I can tell you without question, there would still be a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. There was an issue with the subs, and as a result, they effectively needed to be scrapped, and a whole new track needed to be put in. And so, you can tell what Disney's intent was by how long the ride was closed. It was closed for about 2 years. Disney really hemmed and hawed about this. And, you know, it wasn't a situation where, you know, just the two future hosts of a Florida History podcast were the only ones that were wanting to ride it every time they were there. I mean, there were people who, you know, they would go there and, you know, and they had people that were outside it to tell people, yeah, the ride's closed, I'm sorry. Like, that was their job for the day, was to tell a new wave of people that came to Disney, and that was one of the things on their list, was to ride that ride, to tell them, yeah, it's being refurbished, I'm sorry. Well, a new cheapskate comes in, and he says, yeah, it's too expensive. We need to just go ahead and scrap it, and we need to put up a new IEP. And, you know, hey, look at that. There's lagoon like elements there. And we have a Little Mermaid character that's very popular, doesn't have a ride. Let's make it a Little Mermaid ride. So what ended up happening was you had a makeshift Little Mermaid ride that was effectively a clone of the Dumbo ride that people hated. And then to add insult to injury, Disney just randomly closed 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea because there was constant mechanical errors. And then they didn't let the fans of the ride say goodbye to the ride, which thank goodness they would do when they closed Horizon and when they closed Mr. Toad. They just closed it down. And they were kind of surprised by how much of an outrage fans had by the fact that the ride was just going to be refurbished. It's going to be refurbished. Don't worry, folks. It's safe. To, hey, it's closed. But, you know, here's a Little Mermaid-themed carnival ride instead. At the same time, Disney decides, you know, Mr. Toad, I don't know. It seems a little bit passe.
It's offensive. One of the things I was told when I didn't make the goodbye and I showed up the next time was that it was offensive. And I for the life of me don't understand this. So maybe you can explain this to me 20 years later. How was it offensive?
The gypsy characters.
Ah.
That is the thing that people say, was that it was offensive to gypsies. Now, the United States is one of the only developed countries that does not have caravans of gypsies roaming the countryside. So I don't think it was a very pertinent criticism. But that was one of the things that they used, was that it was racist towards gypsies, that it was also a little bit more violent in the sense that Toad dies, that in one of them he goes to heaven, in another one he goes to hell. It was a Disney 70s ride, essentially. Where at the same time, you know, Disney was making really, really good money in VHS sales of The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. They were making a lot of money, and there was a lot of fans of Winnie the Pooh due to The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. You know, there's also the fact that they were making a lot of merchandise sales off of Winnie the Pooh. And they thought, well, shouldn't Winnie the Pooh have its own ride? So what they decide to do is they decide to close Snow White and they decide to close Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. They learned their lesson. They gave folks a chance to say goodbye to both of those rides. Nobody really cared so much about Snow White, but there was actual peaceful protests outside the gates of Magic Kingdom for Mr. Toad. They had signs, they had placards, all of those things. It remains probably with Horizons one of the rides that are on people's wish list of if they could get back, it would be that.
That's a great teaser for next week. We're going to talk next week about Horizons and some of the changes at Epcot Center, in addition to these changes at the Magic Kingdom, Disney in the late 90s, early 2000s, and probably conclude our series on this then. So, Robert, you'll be back with us next week. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the Florida History Podcast.